The following Stealing the Mind Bible Conference presentation is by Mike Riddle and is entitled Exposing Naked Fossils. For a free catalog of all of our tapes and books, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177 or on the web at compass.org.
Just want to let you know I did not choose this title, but we'll make the best of it. This will be a PG-13 talk. Looking at fossils, our roadmap through here is going to be this. I'm going to look at what we call the historical facts of evolution. I'm going to look at one of our famous ape women, Lucy, a case study in deception. Then I want to look at our relative, the Neanderthals. And then we'll finish up with dinosaurs that fly and some wannabe transitions. So that'll be a kind of a roadmap through here, talking about the fossil record, exposing the fossil record for what it really is. Now, evolution and facts. When we go back through history, we go back 50 years ago. 50 years ago, evolution was talking about the facts of evolution. And this is what they were presenting as the true facts of evolution. Piltdown Man, Nebraska Man, Rambopithecus, all taught as real facts of evolution. Well, it turned out none of those ended up being facts. Because if you look at today what they're teaching as facts of evolution, it is no longer Piltdown Man, no longer Nebraska Man, no longer Rambopithecus. They've all been proven to be false. Now they're teaching Lucy and the Australopithecines and Neanderthals as the new facts of evolution. Well, the question I have there, what will they be teaching us the facts of evolution in the future? See, if these were called facts 50 years ago, now they have new facts. What are the facts going to be tomorrow, and how can we trust their facts today? You see, what they're calling facts never turn out to be facts, folks. They're just ideologies and assumptions. Here is your answer, what they're going to be teaching as the facts of evolution in the future. See, we did not evolve from apes. Now they're telling us we evolved from the pigs. We all have a little bacon in us. Well, let's take a look at exposing this fossil record. There's Lucy. Doesn't Lucy look gorgeous there? Well, let's see what Lucy really looks like. This is the PG-13 part here, folks. When we undress Lucy, all we find are some bones. Now, I want to make sure you understand, we don't find skin, we don't find eyeballs, we don't find hair. What we find are very few bones in the fossil record. Very few bones. So I want to go through a case study. This is one of the most famous ones the evolutionists are using today. It's in almost every biology textbook. Lucy and the Australopithecines. Now, what is an Australopithecine? Australo meaning southern. Pithecine meaning ape, southern ape. We find most of these creatures in South Africa. Now, one of the things we need to understand, if there were really ape men living hundreds of thousands of millions of years ago, then the Bible's wrong. The Bible can't be true. Because you know what Jesus said? In Mark 10, verse 6, Jesus says, from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. You know what that means? Man and woman were on this planet at the beginning of creation, not after thousands of millions of years. So if evolution is true, if Lucy is really a true intermediate form that lived 3.5 million years ago, then the Bible has to be wrong, folks. And Jesus is confused. So let's look at this. Lucy, what was found, and did Lucy walk upright? Now, one of the things the evolutionists are doing, they're trying to find somewhere along the line some creature that went from a creature that crawled around on all fours to start it walking upright on two legs comfortably. They're looking for that creature, and they believe that creature is Lucy. Now, I'm going to use Lucy in this talk to refer to the Australopithecines, because it's much easier to say Lucy than Australopithecine. Is that okay? Okay. So let's look at what's found. Now, first of all, Lucy is described as our ancestor. There's the book they use in many colleges, Lucy, The Beginnings of Humankind. So anybody says Lucy's not our ancestor is not paying attention to what the evolutionists are saying. The evolutionists clearly teach Lucy as our ancestor. Now, here's an artist's conception. This is what gets into the books. Now, what do you notice about this creature there called Lucy? Notice the contemplative look, sitting there contemplating all the relativity of the universe. Now, is that what we found? No, that is an artist's conception of what the evolutionists want us to believe they found, but not what they really found. So what was found? Well, 1974, Donald Johanson found the fossils of Lucy. Found about 40% of the fossil. Claimed it was 3.5 million years old. Well, that date has undergone quite a few changes. It's gone anywhere from about 2.9 million up to 3.5 million to 3.2 million, and right now they're settling somewhere between 3.2 and 3.5 million years. Does that sound pretty exact? Then they claimed it was bipedal. Now, I have a question. Is anybody here bipedal? Raise your hand if you think you're bipedal. Well, I'll let you know right now. If you're not bipedal, then you are a knuckle walker. Because bipedal means you're walking upright comfortably on two legs, your main form of locomotion. Now, I understand that some of you might not be bipedal until you've had that first cup of coffee, but that's another story. So, they're looking at Lucy to be the first upright walking creature. That's the transitional form right there. Now, here's what they found, again, about 40% of the fossil, and that's quite a find, finding 40% of any of these fossils. And this is what they draw and put in the museums and put in the textbooks. Now, again, we don't find hair, we don't find noses, we don't find eyeballs, we don't find a lot of this. And I also put a circle around Lucy's foot bone, foot there. Because one of the things we did not find is Lucy's feet. We did not find any bones of the feet. But we have found other foot bones from other australopithecines. So this is going to be a very key factor here in exposing this fossil record about Lucy. What did we really find and what did they really look like? So we're going to hold on to the feet and come back to that. Now, did Lucy walk upright? Remember, that's one of the main things the evolution have to have. When did we go from a quadruped to a biped? When did that happen? Well, to determine if Lucy walked upright on two legs comfortably, we can actually examine the anatomy. Let's examine something called the rib cage. We'll examine the pelvic area, and then we'll examine the leg and foot bones. All of those will be able to tell whether Lucy walked upright or not. Well, let's start with the rib cage. Now, there's a very clear difference between apes and humans in our rib cage. Ape ribs are very conical in shape. Humans are barrel-like shape. So if you find the whole rib cage, you can determine very easily whether it's a human or whether it's an ape. Well, what do we know about Lucy? Well, here's Peter Schmidt, paleontologist at the Anthropological Institute at Zurich. Not a creationist, but says this. I noticed that the ribs were more round in cross-section, more like what you would see in apes. Human ribs are flatter in cross-section. Then he says, but the shape of the rib cage itself was the biggest surprise of all. The human rib cage is barrel-shaped, and I just couldn't get Lucy's ribs to fit this kind of shape. But yet, in every textbook I see, they have Lucy's rib cage looking like a human. In other words, they've hired artists to draw Lucy rather than rely on the real fossil evidence. Here's two more gentlemen. Brad Herr, PhD in anatomy and neurobiology, and his partner Bert Thompson, PhD in microbiology, make this statement. In Lucy's case, her ribs are conical like those found in apes. That was the anatomy. Clear anatomy of the australopithecine's rib cage is ape-like, not human. But the textbooks will not print that. Well, let's go to the pelvic area. You know, the apes and humans have a very different pelvic area. In chimps and apes, their pelvic area is kind of straight across like this. Why? Because they walk out quadrupeds like this, so their pelvic area can be like this. But in humans, our pelvic area is straight up and down so we can walk upright on two legs comfortably. So there's a marked difference between an ape and a human in the pelvic area. Now, Jay Stern and R. Sussman write this in the American Journal of Physical Anthropology. The marked resemblance of Lucy to the chimpanzee is equally obvious. It suggests to us that the mechanism of lateral pelvic balance during bipedalism was closer to that in apes than in humans. Folks, these are not creationists. Both these people believe in evolution. And they clearly state that the pelvic area was ape-like. Now, before I show, I'm going to show a couple little video clips here. Now, I want to set this up. When they found Lucy's pelvic area, and they found Lucy's pelvic area, it looked identical to a chimpanzee. Identical chimpanzee. In other words, it fit like this. What did they do? Well, they assumed it could not look like that. Because Lucy, they said, had to be able to walk upright. So here's their explanation. Somewhere along the line, Lucy died and got all crushed and all the bones got torn apart. And somehow they fused back together to make them look ape-like. Now, we don't believe that. Well, let me show you the video. Now, this video was taken off of PBS. I can't believe they did this, but on PBS, we got this video from PBS, and the man doing this is the evolutionist. So let me show you the video of what's happening.
The ape that stood up It was a revolutionary idea. We needed Owen Lovejoy's expertise again, because the evidence wasn't quite adding up. The knee looked human, but the shape of her hip didn't. Superficially, her hip resembled a chimpanzee's, which meant that Lucy couldn't possibly have walked like a modern human. But Lovejoy noticed something odd about the way the bones had been fossilized.
When I put the two parts of the pelvis together that we had, this part of the pelvis has pressed so hard and so completely into this one that it caused it to be broken into a series of individual pieces which were then fused together in later fossilization.
Now, I'm going to show another little video that goes along with that. Now, notice how good that fit together. It fit together just perfect right there, but it was an ape-like shape, and they can't accept that. So now I'm going to show the rest of this video clip, and listen to the saw in the background.
This has caused the two bones, in fact, to fit together so well that they're in an anatomically impossible position.
The perfect fit was an illusion that made Lucy's hip bone seem to flare out like a chimp's. But all was not lost. Lovejoy decided he could restore the pelvis to its natural shape. He didn't want to tamper with the original, so he made a copy in plaster. He cut the damaged pieces out and put them back together the way they were before Lucy died. It was a tricky job, but after taking the kink out of the pelvis, it all fit together perfectly, like a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. As a result, the angle of the hip looks nothing like a chimp's, but a lot like ours.
Did I make believers out of you right there? Listen, folks, what we have to understand here, that's all well and done, but you know, our students only see the results of what happened in that lab. They don't see what Lucy really looked like. That's why it's so important for us, every one of us sitting here, to make sure this next generation knows the truth. That means we just can't come and listen to this. We have to become apologists ourselves. We have to become 1 Peter 3:15 Christians, folks. We have to have a ready answer for what we believe, but do that in meekness and respect. We need to know this information so we can pass it on to the next generation, or we're going to lose this next generation also, because the textbooks will not give the truth of science. Now, let's take a look at the knee joint. The pelvic area clearly showed Lucy could not walk upright. Then we have the knee joint. Now, there's something different between an ape and a human in the knee joint. It's called the carrying angle. The carrying angle, that's where the upper leg bone, your upper leg bone, actually slants inward like this. It actually slants inward like this. Why is that? That's because when we take a step, our center of gravity is right over where our foot plants. If our upper leg bones went straight up and down to get our weight over our foot, we'd be walking like this. Kind of like a football player, wouldn't it? You see, so our legs come inward, our carrying angle comes in like this, so when we take a footstep, our weight is directly over our foot. But apes normally don't have that carrying angle. Their upper leg bones come straight down. Why? Because when you watch an ape walk, what does it do? It waddles back and forth. It waddles this way so it can get its weight over its foot. If it went straight forward, it would take a step like this and fall over. So apes generally don't have a carrying angle. But Lucy had about a 15-degree carrying angle. That means it must be able to walk upright comfortably, and it must be an evolving creature, no human being. But you know, here's what they don't teach our students. It's called critical thinking. You know, they've almost outlawed critical thinking in some biology classes in this country. Cobb County, if you read the text, they've really outlawed critical thinking in the science classroom. I talked to a second grader teacher the other day in a public school, Christian. She said, I want to be able to teach some of this. And the principal came up to her and said, no, you can't do this. Only teach what's in the textbook, nothing else. And the response is, are the history teachers doing that? Are the geography teachers doing that? No, they're not. It only seems to be this subject our students not allowed to critically think. So we have to protect this next generation and make sure they get the truth. So here's a critical thinking question to ask. Are there any living apes today that have a carrying angle? Because if there are, that means Lucy could just be an extinct type of ape creature that had a carrying angle. Had nothing to do with humans or evolution. And in fact, there are a couple of apes today with a carrying angle. The orangutan and the spider monkey both have carrying angles identical to humans. But they're not human. They're 100% apes. That's what their DNA says. They are apes. Vastly different than humans. Why do these creatures have carrying angles? That's because both these creatures, the spider monkey and the orangutan, like to climb out on trees and walk on tree branches like this. Folks, if they didn't have that carrying angle, every time they took a step, they'd be falling off the tree branch. But by having that carrying angle, they can take their foot and walk a straight line on that branch. And Lucy had a high carrying angle. So the real conclusion here is Lucy had nothing to do with evolution. Lucy is just an extinct ape-like creature that liked to walk out on branches. You see, when you critically think through this, when you have the opportunity to critically think, you find out what the real science is and what the fossils really reflect. We need to expose these fossils to the rest of the world. So how evolution hinders critical thinking? I want to bring back that foot from Lucy. Now, here's your first test. Which picture is a picture of a human foot? Now, no fair taking your shoes off. And hopefully, most of you got this one. Although, I was in an airport the other day, and this lady had sandals on, and it was somewhere in between. But that's besides the point. So we know which foot, what our feet look like. Now here's an actual foot bone, picture of what we found from an Australopithecine. Now notice the brown part, that's the actual bone we found. Notice the angle there. Notice how the great toe flares out. Now here's the difference between apes and humans. Big difference between apes and humans. Now in humans, we have four fingers and a thumb. Notice our thumb has the capability to stick out like this. Why is that? That's so we can pick things up with our hands and swing from trees with our hands. We can do that. But you go to our feet, look at our great toe. Our great toe sticks forward like the rest of our toes. Why doesn't our great toe have the capability to stick out like a thumb? Well, easy. Most of us don't pick things with our feet, and most of the time we don't swing from trees with our feet, do we? I always have to leave an exception in there. There are exceptions. But in apes, all apes, their great toe flares out like a thumb. And that's exactly what we found in the Australopithecines. In the fossil record, it clearly shows their great toe stuck out like a thumb. David Catchpole, new evidence, Lucy was a knuckle walker. Anatomist Dr. Charles Oxnard has shown that the big toe actually sticks out as in chimpanzees. Talking about Lucy now, the Australopithecines. Now, Charles Oxnard is one of the leading experts in the world on Australopithecines, and he's an evolutionist. And he claims that their anatomy clearly shows, the fossil record clearly shows, their great toe stuck out like a thumb. Very different than humans. So here we go. Footsteps, footprints discovered in 1978 in Laetoli, Tanzania. The footprints were dated 3.5 million years old. Question is, who made those footprints? Well, who was living 3.5 million years ago? Lucy. What did their feet look like? Apes. All the fossil record shows they were ape-like. Now again, there's the difference between ape and human. Let me show you a close-up of the footprints at Laetoli. That looks like 100% human, doesn't it? That's 100% human-looking foot bone. But yet, these footprints are dated by the evolutionists 3.5 million years old. So let's look at the dilemma we have here. The footprints are 3.5 million years old. The footprints look human. Humans were not living 3.5 million years ago. Lucy's feet are ape-like. That's when she was living. So these footsteps should look identical to an Australopithecine, but they don't. Do you see the dilemma? What in the world are the evolutionists going to do about this? Here's what they do. This is a picture I took out of a biology textbook. Notice that foot there? That's Lucy's foot. In the textbook, this clearly says this is Lucy's foot. What they did was gave Lucy human feet with a little hair on it. You see why it's so important for us to know this information to protect this next generation from deception. You heard a wonderful talk this morning, wonderful talk by Mike Gendron. You know, he taught me one of the things, and in one of his little brochures, if you don't have the brochure, you need to get it, but one of his little brochures, he talks about, if I were to stand up here right now and ridicule you, you'd know it, wouldn't you? You would know it. You might even throw things back at me. If I were to stand up here right now and call you names, would you know that, wouldn't you? But if I was to stand up here now and deceive you, you may never know it. That is what's happening in our public education system today. We need to warn this next generation. They're being deceived. They're being deceived by a philosophy that says there is no Jesus Christ. There is no creator God. Folks, if there's no creator God, there is no Jesus Christ, because the Bible clearly states Jesus Christ was the creator of all things. We need to protect them. They're doing their best to take our youth away from a knowledge and belief in Jesus Christ. Here's a picture we took from the St. Louis Museum. That is a statue of Lucy. What did they make Lucy's feet look like? 100% human, just put a little hair on it. Hundreds of thousands of people come through that museum every year and see Lucy standing there. And right across from Lucy, they have an animated figurine of Darwin speaking and talking about evolution. Our youth don't have a chance unless we are willing to stand up and teach our next generation discernment, folks. It's up to us. We cannot afford to lose another generation. Evolution rejects the evidence. Professor Betsy Schumann, evolutionist expert, admits that the statue's feet probably are not accurate. But when asked whether the statue should be changed, she says, absolutely not. Folks, the Bible warns us that this is not a physical battle. We're in a spiritual battle. And we need to know how to fight that battle. And we need to make sure this next generation hears about Jesus Christ, Creator and Savior. I want to show you another great deception. Here's a picture of an Australopithecine, Lucy's skull. Notice those three arrows. One arrow is pointing to the large canine teeth. That's ape-like. Apes have large canine teeth. Then notice the eyes. In apes, the eyes kind of slant back like this, but in humans, they're kind of straight across. Then notice something else about the face. See, apes and humans have a different facial structure. In humans, our face goes straight up and down, from forehead to chin, straight up and down. But in apes, from forehead to chin, it kind of slants forward like this. So here's your second test now. Next time you get a chance, stand in front of a mirror, turn your face sideways, look out this way. If your face comes down a little bit like this, guess what you are? That'll keep you away from mirrors now. But notice those three characteristics. All three of those characteristics clearly show the fossil evidence supports Lucy was ape-like in appearance. But now let me show you a picture I took from a textbook. And look what they have drawn. Notice number one, the teeth. They've been filed down or painted or drawn to make them look 100% human. Notice the eye socket. It's straight across now to make it look human. And notice the face almost has a straight up and down appearance. Folks, our youth don't have a chance unless we are willing to go out there and teach this discernment and teach the truth. We've got to make it our challenge this generation. We can't lose another one. So if you believe in evolution, let me put it, if you believe in evolution, I don't know if anybody here believes in evolution, and that's your business if you want to believe in evolution, because I'm not here to change your mind. I'm just here to give you the truth, and it's your job to go back and check these things out. But if you believe in evolution, here are your grandparents, folks. Because that's what evolution teaches. And I have to say, I'm a grandparent too, so did anybody see any resemblance? Don't say anything. All right, what was Lucy? Lucy was nothing more than an extinct ape. All the fossil evidence, when examined properly and objectively, clearly supports Lucy was some kind of an extinct ape-like creature. So let's do a second case study, Neanderthals. Let's take a look at Neanderthals. Characteristics, anatomy, and genetics of Neanderthals. Who were they? Well, here's your original drawing of Neanderthals. Notice how they've drawn this picture of Neanderthals. Stooped over, making it look almost half quadruped, hair all over it. Is that what we found? Absolutely not. All we found were bones. Then they gave these bones to an evolutionist and said, would you put these things together and draw us some pictures? That's what our youth used to see. So how do they know that? They don't. They hire medical artists to draw these. Well, let's take a look at what we know about Neanderthals. First found in Dusseldorf, Germany. In 1856, in the Neander Valley. Now, I want to point something out. Somewhere in these slides, you'll see Neanderthal with an H. Somewhere, you'll see it without an H. I tend to type in without the H. Why? Because it's one less key to hit, and either spelling is correct. Just so I do that for the English majors out there. Got to take care of it. So you can spell it either way. If you're a three-finger typist, you don't use the H. They originally constructed to look very ape-like. Now, one of the things they used to use for evolution is brain capacity. The bigger your brain capacity, the more you have evolved. And so they got the Neanderthals and found the Neanderthals had an average brain capacity about 200 cubic centimeters larger than us. So they don't use that much anymore. So they got caught. And also, they got caught on the construction. Once a medical anatomist went to look at this construction, this initial construction, they found out somebody had put these bones together all wrong. They put them together based on the philosophy of evolution, not based on science. And they put the bones back together, Neanderthal looked like you and I. Isn't that amazing what the evolutionists will resort to deceive a nation? What else do you know about Neanderthals? Well, they used jewelry. Folks, apes do not have the manipulative powers in their fingers to construct and make very fine jewelry. But we find that grave sites. Use musical instruments. They decay paintings, capable of speech. Only humans, we are the only species on this planet capable of full speech. Other animals can mimic sounds and do grunts and groans, but only humans have the full capability for doing speech. And we found all the anatomy in the Neanderthals for doing speech. They also buried their dead. You know, burying your dead is a very modern religious thing. No other animal in the world buries their dead. They might bury bones, but they don't bury their dead. Matter of fact, they buried a lot of their dead in caves. Uh-oh. Now we've got caveman. They buried their dead in caves. No, folks, that's a very intelligent sign. Shows a great sign of intelligence. Because see, if you buried your dead out there in the wide open, put a marker there, it'd be very easy for the elements to wash it away or somebody pick up the grave site and take it away. But by burying your dead in a cave, when was the last time any of you picked up a cave and took us somewhere? See, it's a very smart thing to do. Where did Abraham bury Sarah? In a cave. Matter of fact, we have found many Neanderthals buried side by side in caves with modern human beings. So what does that make Neanderthals? Modern humans, doesn't it? Nothing archaic. Here's a drawing that was purchased over there in Berlin, a museum. Souvenir. Now, I want to point something out about that fossil. This is the picture they show over there. Notice those two blue arrows. One's pointing to a little bump, and the other one's pointing to a socket where that bump's supposed to be. Now, notice how that face kind of juts down like this, kind of slants down like an ape-like. But that bone has been pulled out about 30 millimeters out of that socket. Look what happens when you construct the fossil the right way. Isn't that amazing? See, I'm glad we have the opportunity to at least teach the truth in some places in this country, because it's not being done in our education system. We need to protect this next generation. We need to all become 1 Peter 3:15 Christians and have these answers for our next generation. Neanderthal anatomy. Now, on the whole, most Neanderthal bones we find have this brow ridge sticking out a little bit, kind of juts out a little bit. Does that make them very archaic, very cavemanish? Incidentally, do we have any caveman living today? Yes, we do. We have a lot of them in Afghanistan, in Iraq. They're nothing more than people that live in caves. So be careful of the idea of caveman. There's nothing archaic about them. Now, how do you get this brow ridge? It doesn't mean you're an old, old, archaic caveman type person. Well, you can get this two different mechanisms. One way, the way you chew can cause compression, pushing up and up at the jaw and cause this bone to stick out a little bit. Another thing we know about anatomy is our facial bones continue to thicken throughout our lifetime. So if you were to take a picture of you when you're 16, take another picture when you're 60, you're going to have a fatter head. There's nothing you can do about it. So if you're living to a ripe old age, maybe 150, 200 years, guess what might happen? These bones continue to thicken and that bone might stick out a little bit. You know, I've seen this bone sticking out in people today, almost a quarter of an inch. Those people don't even need umbrellas. So it's nothing about evolving. It has everything to do with regular anatomy. Now, something else about Neanderthals. On the whole, they had a short, stocky body build. Does that mean they're evolving? No, it doesn't. See, when we look at genetics, when we study science, we find out why this happens. We have a group of people called the Inuits today, the Eskimos. They have a short, stocky body build. What kind of climate do they live in? Cold, harsh climate. See, by being a short, stocky body build, shorter extremities, arms and legs, living in a cold, harsh climate, that protects you because you give off less body heat. It is all about natural selection and genetic variability, which have nothing to do with evolution. Now, I like numbers. Neanderthal population. Common dates for Neanderthals. They were supposedly living about 130,000 to about 30,000 years ago. Now, I read about a dozen different biology textbooks. Every textbook had a different date. Doesn't that show something's not right? At least they should get together and agree on something, but they couldn't. So I kind of took an average in here, about 130,000 to 30,000 years ago. You know what that is? Meaning Neanderthals existed on this planet for over 100,000 years. That's about 2,500 generations. About 2,500 generations of Neanderthals were living in that time. Now, let's take today. We go from the year 1 to the year 2000. We've increased the population of this planet from about 300 million to 6 billion. In other words, in just 100 generations, we've increased the population of this planet almost 6 billion people. And that's through wars and diseases and everything else. 6 billion in that time. But how long were the Neanderthals living? Not for 2,000 years, but for over 100,000 years, 2,500 generations. There should have easily been over 50 billion Neanderthals living on this planet in that time. Where are all the bones? Oh, but they decayed away, folks. The Neanderthals buried their dead, and they buried their dead with artifacts. Where are they? Oh, they decayed away. Then why did we find so many dinosaur bones that lived 65 million years ago? See, the evolutionists have no argument. Everywhere we step over there in Europe, we should be stepping on Neanderthal bones. But we're not. The numbers do not add up. Fickle facts of evolution. 1964, Neanderthals are a subspecies of humans. That's nice. But you know what? In 1997, Neanderthals are no longer part human. They're now a separate species. You see, here we keep changing our mind. How do we know they're a separate species? Because 40, 50 years ago, they were saying they're part of humans. They keep changing their mind. How do they know? Well, they looked at something called mitochondrial DNA. Now, I want to talk about that. Hold on to the mitochondria. Matter of fact, I have a picture for you biologists out here. Just make you salivate. I'm going to show you a picture of mitochondrial DNA in just a moment. That'll make you biologists just salivate. But what facts led to this conclusion? Well, what they did, they took mitochondrial DNA from 1,669 humans and compared it to one Neanderthal. Folks, you can get an average from 1,669 samples. You can get an average. But how in the world do you get an average from a sample of one? You don't. That's called abusing mathematics right there. You can't do that. Well, what is mitochondrial DNA? Well, let's start here. Let's make sure we understand. Mitochondria are membrane-enclosed organelles distributed throughout the internal fluid soup of the cell. Does that help explain it? Okay, well, let's go a little further. What's an organelle? Small structure within the cell to perform dedicated functions. It's kind of like an organ in our body. We have hearts, and we have lungs, and we have kidneys in our body. Well, organelles are separate little pieces inside a cell that kind of float around in the fluid or the soup that do specialized functions. So the little pieces that float around inside the cell do specialized functions. Now, their main function, mitochondria, is conversion of the potential energy of food molecules into ATP. So they do conversion into energy. Mitochondria have their own DNA molecules, entirely separate from our nuclear DNA. Now, our nuclear DNA, that's the part inside the cell, the nucleus of the cell. Nucleus of the cell, we have that DNA. And that gives us all our characteristics. It says we're 100% human being. It says what color hair we're going to have, how big we can potentially grow, what color eyes we're going to have. That's our nuclear DNA. It does not like to come out of the nucleus. It stays there. But then we have all this mitochondrial DNA all through the cell. You might have 500 to 1,000 copies of mitochondrial DNA inside your cell. So what do we know? Mitochondria. Here's for you biologists. And doesn't that get you excited now? There's your mitochondrial. For you non-biologists, don't pay attention. Okay, Neanderthal and human mitochondrial DNA. How did they do this comparison? How did they finally decide that Neanderthals had nothing to do with the human species? Well, here's their conclusion. When we take a look at Neanderthal and humans, there's about 22 mitochondrial DNA substitution differences between Neanderthals and humans. So we can tell them that there's about 22 differences between that one Neanderthal they found and the average human. So about 22 differences in our mitochondrial DNA. But you know, when we compare humans against humans, within the human species, we could have up to 24 differences between our mitochondrial DNA. So what does that mean? Doesn't it look like the Neanderthals are within the human range? Sure does. Well, let's take a look at this closer now. There are a few modern humans who differ by two substitutions more than the Neanderthal individual. Now, using evolutionist logic, now remember, two substitute differences. And they're saying Neanderthals are not human. Therefore, using evolutionist logic, these people are a separate species. Therefore, about 8% of you sitting here today are not human based on the evolutionist logic. Would you please raise your arm? Who out there is not human? There's 8% of you here today that are not human based on evolution logic. I don't know what you are, but isn't this fun when you use their own words against them? That's why they don't want logic taught in the schools. Compromise. Dr. Uros, PhD astrophysicist. Now, we learned about discernment this morning. I want to show you something. We need to learn to discern because there's all kinds of things creeping into the church today. All kinds of things creeping into the church today. Oh, the age of the earth doesn't matter, but it must be old. Folks, once we accept an age of the earth that's billions of years old, we have compromised quite a bit about the Bible. You have to start changing an awful lot in the Bible. You have to start saying, well, I believe in death before sin. You have to start saying God's very good now includes billions of years of death again. You have to say that the flood was a local flood. You have to wonder why Jesus had to physically die and conquer death when death was not the result of sin. There's a whole lot of things we have to start thinking about. But Dr. Uros, one of the leaders of the progressive creationist movement, says this: research will prove Neanderthals made no contribution to the human gene pool, existed before Adam and Eve, and went extinct, either shortly before or after the creation of Adam and Eve. In other words, here he's saying that Neanderthals went extinct either shortly before the creation of Adam and Eve or very soon after the creation of Adam and Eve. In other words, they are a separate species, not human. And this is one of the biggest movements in our church today, progressive creationism. It's the idea that, oh, God created using the Big Bang explosion. I'll let you know right now, folks, the Big Bang is in big trouble scientifically. It was scientifically shown to be dead about 20 years ago. The only thing keeping it alive is our school textbooks. You need to get the facts about the Big Bang, not what was being taught. And it's also the idea that the days of creation are long periods of time, that sin was not the result, did not cause death. Death was already there for millions and billions of years, and the flood was a local flood. And there was a sub-race of humans before Adam and Eve. That is the progressive creationist movement. You can buy into that all you want, folks, but it is not part of the Bible. But remember what he says here. Now, in 2005, a professor was charged with falsifying dates for Neanderthals. For 30 years, this man had been out there falsifying dates for Neanderthals. Originally, he had carbon dated these Neanderthal species, three different species, at 36,000 years old, 21,000 years old, and 27,000 years old. Carbon dated these, and everybody in the evolutionist camp was accepting these. And this was what's being taught as a fact of evolution. But just recently, in 2005, he was charged with falsifying the dates, and the dates were really about 7,500, 3,300, and 250 years old, folks. What are they going to do now? And how many other dates have been falsified to protect evolution? What does this mean? Based on the redating, Neanderthals were living at the same time as modern humans that did not become extinct shortly after the creation of Adam and Eve. This is a serious blow to both all the evolution movement and the progressive creationist movement. They've been wrong again, folks. Why do we have to keep changing God's word for man's ideas? Why can't we just start with God's word and read it for what it says? Why do we have to keep going to the scientists to understand God's word? You see, our whole idea of the Big Bang has changed over this last 50, 60 years. What we taught as fact once is no longer a fact. But God's words never change, folks. Why don't we just start with it and stay with it? It says, in the beginning, God created. And you know, God wrote down on the stone tablets in the Ten Commandments, for in 6 days God created the heaven, the earth, and all that's in them. So conclusion about Neanderthals. They had a protruding brow ridge. That has nothing to do with evolution. Stocky body build has nothing to do with evolution. They became an isolated population of people. You know, when you get any kind of population of any species isolated, they tend to lose certain characteristics and take on certain characteristics. And we find many of the Neanderthals in Ice Age Europe area. Short, stocky body build to protect themselves in a cold, harsh climate. They were 100% human. We believe the Neanderthals lived after the flood during the Ice Age period. All the bone evidence, all the scientific evidence clearly supports that. They were not a subspecies of humans. Every characteristic we see in the Neanderthal fossil record, we find in modern humans today. Clearly 100% human. Let's expose some more fossils. Ready for this? What happened to the dinosaurs? Well, here's what they're teaching in the schools today. Dinosaurs evolved into birds. That is the main teaching about dinosaurs today. They built a brand new children's museum in Indianapolis last year. That whole museum was dedicated to teaching children that dinosaurs evolved into birds. Whole museum just for that. So what is the fossil evidence we have to support this? Well, we have a creature called Archaeopteryx. It's in every biology textbook we have. The feathered dinosaur. Textbooks, biology, Miller and Levine. To many paleontologists, the bird is a dinosaur with feathers. That definition may sound odd, but it makes sense. The fossil record, the first fossil ever found of an early bird-like animal is in the genus Archaeopteryx. So that's exactly what the biology textbooks are teaching. So the question is, how could a reptile change into a bird? How many things have to change? How did flight evolve? Well, folks, you just don't grow feathers and start flying. Between a reptile and a bird, almost every organ has to change. Every internal organ has to change. How could that happen? That creature survive? There's absolutely no mechanism for that. It can't happen. No possible mechanism for that to happen. But yet in our textbooks, we still read, like modern birds, it had flight feathers, but otherwise it was more like some small bipedal dinosaur of its era. For instance, like those dinosaurs, Archaeopteryx had teeth, wing claws, and a tail with many vertebrae. Well, folks, there are birds today that have wings, ostrich and Hodson in South America. They're still 100% bird. So if we find a bird with claws on its wings, it has nothing to do with evolution. It's just a bird with claws on its wings. Then we have found other birds in the fossil record with teeth. 100% bird. And their teeth differ from reptiles. Some people have teeth and some don't. Are you evolving? No. Dr. Alan Fiducia, one of the leading bird experts in the world, and he's an evolutionist, says this. Theropod dinosaurs, for example, had curved, serrated teeth, but the earliest birds had straight, unserrated peg-like teeth. They also had a different method of tooth implantation and replacement. See, they don't put things like this in the textbooks. The bird teeth are very different than the reptile teeth, so they couldn't have evolved. Dinosaur to bird evolution, is there any real evidence? Yes, there is, folks. There is real evidence. Right on the National Geographic, October 15, 1999, the Archaeoraptor, the proof that dinosaurs evolved into birds. But the story got exposed. Red-faced and down-hearted paleontologists are growing convinced they have been snookered, I like science words, by a bit of fossil fakery from China. The feathered dinosaur specimen that they recently unveiled, to much fanfare, apparently combines the tail of a dinosaur with the body of a feather, body of a bird. In other words, what they did, they smuggled the bones out of China, then pasted feathers on it, and here's National Geographic falling for that and putting colored pictures all over their magazine of the feathered dinosaur. And it took them several months before they retracted it. But the damage was done. The pictures were already in the textbooks. Here's Discover Magazine, one of these great magazines, April 2005, talked all about how flight evolved. But you know, when you read through this article, you see words like this. Theorize, suggest, it might have, may have, could have, no one knows for sure, alternative scenarios. Those are what I call fuzzy words. Not one fact for how it happened. But yet, you need to learn how to do logical thinking, critical thinking skills to see through this. Once you see these fuzzy words, it is clear indication they don't have any evidence. They just want you to believe it. And these are the words I actually find in biology textbooks also to support evolution. Evolution of flight. How did some feathered dinosaurs begin to fly? Well, let me give you the scenario. Let me give you the scenario how it is. Now, you may not believe this, but this is exactly what they're teaching in high school and colleges. Some of these small reptiles, small dinosaur creatures, went climbing up in the trees, out on the branches, jumped off the branches, and tried to fly. And eventually their arms turned around, they grew feathers and started flying. Now, wait a minute. If that is true, we should find some very old trees out there with piles of bones by them by the ones that didn't make it. Here's Discover Magazine, April 2005. In the tree down scenario, tree climbing dinosaurs jumped to the ground or to other trees, and feathers on their outstretched forelimbs helped extend their fall. Eventually, their descendants became gliders and then finally began to flap their wings. Right there. Folks, that whole article, read through it, neglected to say how the first feathers evolved, offered no factual evidence for how this happened. There are no explanations, no examples of living or fossil scales on feathers, and it was long in fantasy, short in evidence. But they made the claim, and people buy into that because we forgot how to discern the truth. We forgot how to do that. Here's how it happened. Rex. There are no T-Rexes that flew. And then we have more bird mistakes. 1993, the flightless bird, cover of Time magazine, turned out to be a theropod, a dinosaur. 1996, the feathered fossil, turned out to be just an array of fibers. And then China, the Proto-Archaeopteryx robusta, turned out to be another false claim. But you know, when I look in encyclopedia, here's a brand new encyclopedia, 2002. Here's pictures of feathered dinosaurs all through there. We have not found one of those, but yet that's what they're drawing in our textbooks now, folks. We need to train this next generation how to discern the truth. If you want to learn, there's your book you want to start with, Refuting Evolution. This book has all the information how to refute what was on PBS a couple years ago. PBS did a large article on evolution. This book will help you understand how to refute what happened on there. Show how they were long on fantasy and short on evidence. Here's your real dino bird, folks. You want a real one? There it is. But you want to take a look at some wannabe intermediates? Perhaps if evolution is true, we might find fossils of these things, the buttercat. Or maybe the cat-cow. Why don't we find these things? How about the Catrella? Or maybe we should find a sparrow boxer or a tiger owl. Why don't we find these things? We should find these if evolution is true, but we don't. Evolution fossils, does the fossil record support evolution? Absolutely not. Where are the millions of intermediate fossils? Folks, when I look at the textbooks, I see the same 5 to 6 alleged transitions they've had for the last 30 years. They've come up with nothing new. No true transitions in the fossil record whatsoever. But you know the Bible has an answer? When we turn to the Bible has the answer. Right in Genesis chapter 1, everything was created after its kind with genetic variability, folks. We have the capability to be genetically variable within kind, but not become something else. We can trust the Bible from beginning to end. And a case study, how do fossils form? I'll finish with this. Folks, fossils do not form by drawing pictures in textbooks. That is not how it happens. Let me show you the case study. Here's day one, dead cat on grass. Day three, you have a smelly dead cat on grass. Day nine, a very smelly dead cat on the grass. Day 20, part of Earl's missing. Day 38, more of Earl's missing. Day 65, Earl is missing. Where's Earl? See, you don't fall over dead and become a fossil, but yet we have billions and billions and billions of fossils today, folks. They don't fall over dead and become a fossil. It takes a catastrophic event to make these fossils. The best explanation for the fossil record is the Genesis flood, which was a true worldwide flood. Folks, it does make a difference what we believe. If we believe in evolution, I'm going to show you the real difference. I want to show you the real difference. All that's fine and dandy, folks, but here's the real difference. It's a heart condition. Here's 4 questions. Who am I? If you believe in evolution, you're nothing more than an animal with higher intelligence. But if you believe in the Bible, folks, you're made in the image and likeness of God. You are fearfully and wonderfully made, and nobody has the right to destroy innocent human life anywhere on this planet, folks. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Even that baby in that womb is fearfully and wonderfully made. Why am I here? If you're believing in evolution, folks, a chance accident made your existence possible. But if you're believing the Bible, because of God's love, folks, God loves you. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. He loves you. No matter what you believe right now, folks, God loves you. He loves you so much that he sent his only begotten son to die in your place. And all he's waiting for is a response from you. He loves you. What is the purpose of life, folks? If you believe in evolution, it's whatever we make it. But if you believe in the Bible, to know, love, glorify, obey, and enjoy God. That's our purpose, folks. Don't forget that. Enjoy God. And finally, the most important question, what happens when I die? This is the saddest part of all. This is what they're teaching our youth. You're believing in evolution? We go back to dust and that's all there is, folks. That is what evolution teaches. But folks, if you believe in the Bible, it depends on your relationship with Jesus Christ. Do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? If you don't, then you're sitting in the evolutionist channel right there, folks. What you're saying is you're going to go back to dust and that's all there is, folks. That is not true. There is something after death. Either you go to heaven or you go to hell, and that's it. And you make your choice what you're going to do. Folks, we need to be 1 Peter 3:15 Christians. We need to become apologists. You do not become an apologist by sitting and listening. You must study. So I'll stop there. And let's go out there and be apologists and take this next generation for us. God bless you.
This has been Exposing Naked Fossils, presented by Mike Riddle. To receive a free catalog of all of our Bible teaching books and tapes, information on upcoming Bible conferences in your area, or details of our missionary outreach, call 800-977-2177 24 hours a day, or on the web at compass.org.